Hi, folks. I am Amy Wolfe, and I am the project coordinator for the Smoke-Free Housing Coalition of Maine. I'd like to start by just thanking my co-author and the founder and chair of our coalition, Tina Pettengill, who's also here today in the room, and our funder of the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Maine. And just a little background on who we are. We're a diverse group of key stakeholders, over 50 people made up of landlords, tenants, legal professionals, environmental health professionals, and of course, public health professionals. And our mission is really to protect residents in multi-unit housing from involuntary exposure to secondhand smoke. And this is really about making the supply of smoke-free housing meet the demand. So why do we talk about secondhand smoke? Why is it such a big issue in workplaces, public places, and now the home? Well, the Surgeon General says that there is no safe level of secondhand smoke exposure. It is a class A carcinogen, which means it does cause cancer in human beings. And there is no ventilation system on the market, whether residential or commercial or otherwise, that is able to remove the toxins that exist within tobacco smoke. Anywhere from 5 to 65% of air exchange still occurs between units. In a well-sealed, high-end condo unit, the average is about 27% of air exchange. So why else should we really care about this? What's the big issue? Well, Americans spend approximately 90% of their time indoors, 65% of that time in the home. And in a state like Maine, where you're a very gray state and a very cold state, that percentage can be anywhere from 65 to 100% of time. Secondhand smoke is a particular concern to those with pre-existing heart conditions, respiratory conditions, allergies, and asthma. Infants, children, and the elderly are extremely vulnerable to the negative effects of secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke is linked to, as a cause of SIDS, respiratory infections, sinus infections in children. And children exposed to secondhand smoke in the home are 44% more likely to suffer from asthma. So this is certainly a huge health message that we bring a lot with tenants, but what is really the message to those key investors, to the landlords, to the property managers that really need to take the first step in making that voluntary policy change happen? Well, first of all, smoking in a multi-unit building costs landlords a lot of money. It costs anywhere from 2 to 6 times to turn over a unit where someone's been smoking as a non-smoker, and that really speaks back to what Romina said earlier about, you know, the turnover costs when a smoker moves out and a non-smoker moves in, and we'll go over that in detail in a second. It poses a large fire hazard. Smoking-related fires are the number one cause of residential fire deaths in the United States as well as the state of Maine. Causes burns to carpets, laminates, furniture, and it leaves that awful smoke residue on walls and curtains. Anyone who's ever been in a building with white walls where someone's been smoking can see that tar that sticks, and it's very difficult to clean and paint over. Now, the Smoke-Free Housing Coalition has done a lot of research into the financial benefits of a smoke-free policy, because that's really the target message with the landlords that we work with. And we found from some analysis done in 2004 and 2006 with Sanford Housing Authority and Auburn Housing Authority, and these are in SROs, or single resident occupancy units, that it can cost anywhere from 2 to 6 times as much to turn over. These numbers are a little outdated, so we did a new analysis last spring with another subsidized elderly facility that's also an SRO development that showed that it's anywhere from 2 to 7 times to turnover, depending on whether or not that person is a light smoker or a half a pack or less a day, or a heavy smoker, or someone who smokes a pack or more, or has guests in their home that are allowed to smoke. And the other thing about a smoke-free policy is it not only saves you money in turnover, or saves the landlord money in turnover, is that it's marketable. The reality is people want to live in smoke-free housing. 78% of tenants, this is right here, is from subsidized housing and housing authorities in Androscoggin, Sanford, and Brunswick. But when we couple that with the market rate tenants, we found that about 78% of tenants want to live in smoke-free housing or a smoke-free environment. So building on an infrastructure is really what we did in order to create this successful campaign. In Maine right now, workplaces, public places, schools and school grounds can't even smoke in a car with a child under the age of 16. So we really have a strong tobacco control environment. Social norm change has really been successful in Maine around secondhand smoke exposure. So we use this health message when we talk to tenants. We're talking about empowering tenants who want to live in a smoke-free environment, making them very aware of the fact that secondhand smoke has a harmful effect on their health and the health of their family. But really, when we talk to landlords, the people that are responsible for making that policy change, we bring up about that economic message, talking about turnover, talking about insurance, talking about fire hazards. We've worked a lot with the state and community agencies, both the public health and the housing, and that's very key, is that collaboration between all key stakeholders in order to get this pushed forward and to create a lot of legitimacy in both fields, whether that be in the public health field or the housing market. We've created our own incentives, making smoke-free housing as easy as possible, anything from providing landlords and property managers with free signage, technical assistance, as well as a free online searchable registry that, you know, anyone from throughout the state can list as well as search for a smoke-free home. And we also provide guides, resources, and like I said, technical assistance for both adopting a policy, implementing a policy, but also enforcing that policy. So we do it before, during, and after the fact. And we also hold the Smoke Free Homes Pledge Campaign, which is sponsored by the Environmental Protection Agency, which has really allowed the Smoke Free Housing Campaign to expand outside of just multi-unit housing, but into single-family homes as well. And I would say that the number one key to our success has really been our ability to collaborate and network. Like I've mentioned earlier, it's really important to have all key stakeholders on board. We've done a lot of work with Maine Housing, which is the state's lead housing authority, both with incentivizing smoke-free housing through financial incentives, as well as just getting to local landlords, getting to the local housing authorities, having that endorsement from a key housing stakeholder. We've also worked a lot with the local housing authorities, both in helping them transition and also working with them to educate their Section 8 landlords on smoke-free housing. And then we've also worked a lot with the local agencies, both the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Maine and the community agencies, the Healthy Maine Partnerships, to get out to both the local housing authority and the local landlord. And a big part of this collaboration is keeping our messaging consistent, and that's one thing that we've been very good about, both as a coalition keeping it consistent over the past 4.5 years, but also working with the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Maine, who does a lot of work around secondhand smoke education and outreach, and making sure that everything from our signage, as you can see, is very consistent in its look, but also anything from radio ads to television commercials to outreach materials have a consistent message as well as appearance, so that regardless of what agency it's coming from, that people are still getting the same message. So just to go over some of the success that we've had over the past 4.5 years, like I mentioned, a lot of various and diverse partners throughout the state. You know, everything from public health to housing to environmental health to legal health, legal professionals. Right now, 72% of our housing authorities now have a smoke-free policy, which is the largest percentage in the country. That's 18 out of 25. 17 are public housing authorities, and one is the nation's first tribal housing authority with a smoke-free policy. Approximately 40% of our private market apartments are smoke-free. This comes from studies that were done in April and November of 2007. A follow-up will be done in November of this year. We are the second state in the nation to pass a one-point incentive in our state's qualified allocation plan, which gives developers of affordable housing low-income tax credits towards their development for adopting 100% smoke-free policies. And this year, we will be going for a threshold requirement. Right now, they provide a one-point incentive. In addition, we have the only municipal agency, the City of Portland, that gives an incentive to developers of affordable housing, and that's a 5% incentive. Right now, our online registry, which I mentioned earlier, has over 3,100 units registered from 15 of the 16 counties in our state. And over 90,000, and I would say that's a very conservative number at this point, our tenants are protected from secondhand smoke in their multi-unit homes. And this is all done through voluntary policy change. You know, nothing is legislated, nothing is mandated, everything is through education and outreach, really incentivizing smoke-free housing. And just some conclusions I'd like everyone to take away from today is that anyone looking to build a smoke-free housing campaign or to expand a smoke-free housing campaign in your community or state is to really make sure that you're working with any pre-existing statewide or community-wide tobacco programs from the very beginning. You want to take advantage of those existing resources, whether they be funding, whether they just be support, making sure that you engage all partners in your efforts, and then mimic any messaging that's currently going on around secondhand smoke exposure in the home. Make sure that you're creating those diverse partnerships. I can't stress that enough how important networking within the housing community is for the success and legitimacy of your program. You want to target housing authorities and large developers from the very beginning, financiers as well, even insurance companies. But you also want to engage not only public health, but environmental health and legal and housing professionals, because these people are really going to need, especially legal professionals on your side with a lot of work you do with tenants. And don't go it alone. Don't reinvent the wheel, as I like to say, is that there are a lot of successful programs around the country that are already doing this, Maine and Michigan being two models. And there are plenty of resources for developing a smoke-free housing campaign, and we'd all be more than happy to help you in that development. Any questions, please go to our website, smokefreeforme.org. You can call or email us anytime. I do have some pamphlets and fact sheets in the back if anybody is interested, and we'll take any questions.
Just questions for clarification at this point, if you could, and hold the discussion-related questions to the very end. So I see two hands, if they are quick. I think you were first, and then we'll go to you, sir. Nick?
What's the population of Maine?
1.3 million.
Do the policies contain sanctions for violators?
It is a lease violation. So depending on how your lease stands, you can evict based on a smoke-free or smoking violation. Yes.
Is that being done?
It is. We know of at least four evictions that have included smoking.
Well, thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you.